begin by motion to ask them to approve the minutes from last month. Everyone get a chance to read them. Thank you. Any comments on the minutes? Okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
And now, unfamiliar territory, first on the agenda, Tim Rose. You can just give us a brief report.
Things, as far as the finances, the IRA, are pretty much on target. We have issues, I don't know, a year over. So we have some good data. We're looking at January, subsequent January, and January, we haven't really been focused on it in that time. But February, February, we're about where we were last year. So far, March looks like it's going to be about what we were last year as well. So for budgeting purposes, that's good news. Other than that, there's really not a lot going on. It's February, the slowest month of the year. January is the second slowest. People aren't trying to figure out. People are doing construction and all that sort of stuff. But usually, in March, usually it picks up. Although we've had a cold March. So usually construction usually starts towards the end of March and into April. April is really big.
So I'd just like to verify with the conclusion I'm reaching from what you said. If the volume is essentially stayed the same year to year, then that essentially says that as a result of flow control, no additional volume has been coming in. We're operating the same way we were. The only difference is we were able to equalize the price for all and not have anybody leave the system.
Essentially, yes. The first part of your statement, as far as the volume staying the same, I was looking at it from last year on the flow control conditions. And when we develop the budget for this year, we usually only do it in about the June-July timeframe, which is difficult for us because in our business, it's not like a municipality. We have your property taxes or your state income and so forth. It would be synonymous with mentioning having the county budget completely relying on sales tax only. And that's essentially what we are. We're strictly dependent on the economy. And that's why the comptroller's office, the state comptroller's office, wants to have more reserves than any private municipality to allow for those state fluctuations. So if the economy dies, the volume dies. They can take a drastic dive. So what I say we're similar to what we were last year under flow control conditions, it allows us to better predict, at least on the economy question, better predict the flow and it is more, can be more steady. For production purposes.
I just want to respond to Legislator Wisnik's comments where he said, even out what everybody pays for the trash. I don't agree with that statement because I recycle a lot. And I pay a forward under my house, I pay $25 or $30 a month. I have a 15 or 20 gallon thing. I probably put it out once a month. I pay the same $25 as somebody that stuffs it to the top and puts it out every single week. So I'm conserving and I am still paying for the guys that are putting it out every single week. I put mine out in 2 weeks. But I put recycling. So it's really not saying that everybody's paying for equal trash because it's not. I'm clearly putting in much, much less than I see my neighbors when they put out. But yeah, my point is the same as theirs.
To that point, you're paying a private hauler, right?
You're
paying a private hauler, but wouldn't it be true that then the private hauler is paying for the weight based on the weight of it? So the private hauler
is paying the RRA.
So the private hauler is making more of a profit on you than on the person who goes
out. Right, but it's not even. You can't say that I'm paying the 10 of us neighbors that have this company. Are not based, we're not paying based on what we use, we're just paying an even price based on what the tenants use. So you can't say one or two people trying to conserve is lowering. I have no incentive to lower my usage. My incentive should just be to fill my barrel to the top and run it down to the road every day and because I'm still going to pay the same $25 or $28 whether that barrel's full or empty. And I'm very conscious of it. I have recycling down there every week, but I can go 3 weeks without putting my garbage thing out.
I'd like to, you raised an interesting point, that's been fair, and I could just clarify. When I said everyone's paying the same price, I was referring to the haulers bringing the trash. But in any event, you raised a very important issue, and it may be that given that there are people who recycle and minimize trash and people who don't, maybe the county is ready for pay by the bag.
I would love to. I'd rather see it paid for.
You pay by volume.
I'd be 100% sure. And you know what? They just did that up in Cape Cod a few times. I read the paper. And their trash cost, people were fighting, and now they're all like, my trash costs have gone down because they're recycling now, everything. And their costs are going down. So people, I'll bring it to Marshall.
But it's for the very same reason that you would suggest that you're incentivized to minimize the trash rather than steal.
Well, I have no incentive right now.
Instead,
it's
the other way.
I'll fill it up with dirt. You know, I mean, really, if I'm paying the $25, I'm going to fill the stupid thing up and bring it down. There is no incentive right now.
All right,
Before I heard what Legislator Wisnik was about to say, I was going to say, pay as you go. That is something that we can consider down the road, and it especially, I think at the transfer stations, people already do pay as they go, and they're pretty motivated. But we could see if we can work something out with the haulers where they have. If you're only putting it out once a month, you see, excuse me, a different rate.
Yeah, the hours just don't work for me.
Any other questions for George?
I had a question, if I could. I should write them down when I think of them. Have you heard anything from the DEC yet? Okay.
I keep hearing from Nationwide. I keep telling you that. But they've been telling me that for probably about at least 6 months. I think they're finishing up with Rockland. Is what they're working on now. And so there's, I guess, some more county personnel. And as soon as they're done, then they're going to call us up and get down to you over the water. So, I haven't been anything. And I was, we gave that to them in December of 11. Yeah. Years and 3 months.
Will you let us know when you know that we do meet with them?
Yeah.
So that
I'll just let you know when you know.
Okay.
Okay.
That would be great. Yeah, just so that you're where you are in the process. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
You know, the other thing to consider too is that was written several years ago, and that was under a different board. Now, when we have two boards picked up, we have those board members, and actually, I don't think either of them were actually around when we voted originally. So the thing was, two new board members come on board, it could be turned around again. I guess it's an easy way of saying it. You know, new people, new ideas, and
So
maybe it's difficult to do. Yeah. I just listened to the board and figured this is okay. I'm done. For this, the Monday's meeting, just to give you a heads up, the only resolution we have right now, although it's changed, is the kind of resolution for the board members to come up on the last minute. But right now, it's a promise thing. We tried budget month for 2 months to make sure this is accomplished and this is something we really want to do so far. But at $9,000 a month makes no sense to keep renting. So we rented it for a couple of months and that's enough. Now we're going to ask today and purchase one for $100.
So the visitor will be open on Friday. Myself and my operations manager are coming in on Saturday.
actually go through their all the literature and see the estimates there one day. We call that membership. The other two resolutions, one is a clarification of an old resolution done back in 2005 on the way the board wanted the fuel surcharge done. It was 105. It was 105. But the $103 a ton plus the fuel surcharge. And the way it works is that our controller, at the end of every month, goes on the U.S. government website and looks at the diesel fuel rates. And that's what it's calculated off of, just the way the board wanted it done for for some reason, I don't know why, back then the board wanted it done using the legal rates. So, the administration not going to let that change, so I think that the resolution is legal. So, I'm going to have that changed to Central America. The U.S. states under the U.S. government based on Central America. So, we're going to make that change. I did go back and look over the past few years, well, since it started, on whether or not the industry, which way it's getting used, or who's probably going to fill surcharge. The cumulative 0.4% is what we use. So financially, there's going to be no difference. It's just, I brought the board's attention to this one should be done right. It should be central bank. The UFC is not going to be why it's going to be changed. So that's one. And the other one is the job description change for one employee. Another person that has,
I don't. I was just going to update the committee that I spoke. Actually, I can do it right now, but I'll take one second. So, two things. Charlie Lamb, you just quickly emailed me, apologize for not being here tonight, but he had a city meeting. He always makes our meetings. And I spoke with Leon Smith, who was away, and then I was away last week, and we agreed that when we're both back, which is now, we're going to get together and discuss the bonding resolution as well as just update each other. So I'll update the committee on that meeting for the next month.
Okay.
Please
don't. I want to hear about
crude
oil.
Okay, thank you. Next on the agenda, we have Kate Hudson from Riverkeeper to give us a presentation on crude oil. And I'm going to turn over the floor
to Kate. There are actually three things. So, Dan Chapley, my colleague from Riverkeeper, who lives in Fort Hewitt, and I live in Gardner, so we are Riverkeeper, but we are also Fulton residents, so we have a very specific concern about this issue in relation to Alder County. And this issue has snuck up on everybody. I would say from federal regulators all the way down to local emergency first responders and everybody in between. And we have been on a very, very steep learning curve at Riverkeeper, probably starting in December of last year. This is our first trial run of this slide presentation, and so we welcome all comments, suggestions, feedback, because we actually think a very important part of getting our arms around this issue is to provide people with information so they can take action or ask their legislators to take action.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of information on these slides. By the way, the train in that first slide is the train that ran off the tracks in Kingston, right next to Office Depot. And I assume most people heard about that. It really brought the issue home. Yeah, this can happen here too. There's a lot of information on these slides, and some of it you may be familiar with. I will welcome questions at any point during the presentation. And if everything seems clear, we can move quickly through particular slides. So this is what I want to cover in the slideshow and hopefully answer the questions up there. What is crude oil? Where is the oil coming from? How is it being transported? And how much? What are the risks? What is being done to reduce the risks? What isn't being done? What we are trying to do, and then what Ulster County residents and Ulster County legislators could potentially do. So, go ahead. One of the questions we get asked a lot is, well, there's always been crude oil coming up and down the river, and why is this any different? And the reason is the crude oil that used to come up the Hudson River is refined oil. It's oil that has been gone through refineries and is coming up the river to be distributed for home heating oil, fuel, or gasoline to diesels at gas stations. And this is the way that pipeline operated. It was, and you always saw the filled barges going up the river and the empty barges coming down the river. And I'm a sailor out of the roundout, and about 2.5 years ago, I noticed all of a sudden all these full barges coming down the river and empty barges going up the river. And so this is something literally, particularly with respect to the river, that's only been happening in the last few years. And one of the concerns that we have is that the impact of the crude oil spill, both Bakken oil and a heavy crude spill, are dramatically different from a spill of refined oil. So where is the crude coming from? Fracking. Anybody heard about fracking? Hydrofracking isn't happening in New York right now, at least not a high volume of horizontal, but it is happening in North Dakota, and that brown area called the Bakken Shale Formation is being fracked heavily, and it's not being fracked for natural gas, it's being fracked for oil. And the oil is pouring out of the ground faster than they can transport it to refineries. The interesting thing is that oil refineries are all along the coast. So we have some refineries in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. We have them in the Gulf Coast. We have them on the Pacific Coast. And normally, the oil came from areas that were accessible by boat. And so that was typically, they went from the drill site in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, and then went to the refineries by boat. All of a sudden, we have oil pumping out of formations in Central America, the central part of the United States, and there's no way to get it to refineries. There are no pipelines, or very insufficient pipelines, and so trains were turned to, and this is just literally a few years ago.
Is the hydro fracking used to get oil as well? It's a different kind of fracking.
Same kind of fracking.
So then you have all that wastewater.
You have all that wastewater, and the other thing that you have is there is natural gas coming out of these oil wells, and they don't have any way to get that to market, and so they burn it. They flare it, and I don't know if anybody has seen the pictures from the satellites overhead, from, you know, looking down on the United States of America, but you have an area like New York City that's lit up because of all the lights in New York City, and you have an equivalent lighting up of North Dakota, where hardly anybody lives, because all the natural gas is being burned off from these drill barriers. So we have two separate sources of oil. Some of it is coming from Canada and coming across the top of the Great Lakes and then down along Lake Champlain through Albany. And then another source is the one that you see going through Chicago, Cleveland. But Albany is one of seven, and this, we're talking about both coasts now in the United States, significant port entry points for oil, unrefined oil, crude oil, to be loaded on ships and transported to refineries. And so it has become a huge transshipment point. And we will see what the consequences of that is. So this is the curve we're talking about, 2007 to 2013. This is the jump. This is how quickly it happened over about a five-year period. And nobody really saw it coming. In fact, many refineries in the east were starting to close down. They weren't getting any oil. And many railroad companies were struggling because their coal shipments were being reduced. And then all of a sudden, oil came along. One of the biggest concerns we have, crude oil coming from the Bakken Formation, is called light sweet crude. And we'll talk a little bit more about the differences. But the oil coming from Canada, it tends to be heavier crude, and we're particularly concerned about the Alberta tar sands crude. And there's a picture. So light sweet doesn't mean beautiful. And a still would coat shoreline and anything that lives on the surface of the Hudson River with a horrible, black, slimy surface. Tar sands is much more solid and will sink to the bottom of any water body that it is filled into with disastrous consequences.
Or remains suspended in the
water column. Or could, yeah, remain suspended in the water column, which means that it gets absorbed into the food chain. Again, we see the huge jump. I mean, and we're really talking about, even in 2010, 2011, we're talking about a really small amount. And all of a sudden, in 2013, we went from virtually single-digit thousands to 450,000, pretty much. So, how is it moving through the Hudson Valley? You all may know the answer to that question, but it's basically train, vessel, and barge. CSX owns the track on the west side of the Hudson, and two crude oil trains per day move through the Hudson Valley. A crude oil train is 100 to 120 cars long, and each of those cars holds about 3,000 gallons of crude oil. And just to point out the difference between the trains, and many of you may have waited while one of these trains went by as you were trying to get the place in Houston. It used to be the trains were mixed loads, and so you would have something like ethanol, and then you would have a
grain or garbage or
grain or some kind of oil, like linseed oil or whatever. And they would be used to buffer the more volatile products. Now they're entirely 110 cars of crude oil. And I know that this is mentioned in this slide, and I will mention it. Global, which is the company that owns a terminal in Albany, also owns terminal properties in New Windsor, right outside Newburgh. And they are applying for the very same permits in Newburgh as they are New Windsor that they are applying for in Albany, which is to run boilers so that they can heat the crude oil that they're transferring from trains to boats. You would never want to heat Bakken because Bakken has a flash point of 73 degrees Fahrenheit. So the only oil that one would need to heat is heavy crude like tar sands.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are very, very concerned that they are applying for and being considered for a new capacity to handle heavy crude from Canada. So far, the Department of Environmental Conservation has reacted to this application by giving it a negative declaration. In other words, deciding that it's not going to have any environmental impact to transfer this oil to vessels and put it on the Hudson River.
And this is the second time that it's had it with any permit for these terminals that have been.
So the Region 4, which is based in right outside of Albany, is handling the Albany Global Terminal permit. Region 3 in New Paltz is handling consideration of the permit for New Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
And those are still pending.
On the back of this fact sheet, you'll find sort of a timeline that goes into some of the permits that those
The other manner in which crude oil is coming through the Hudson Valley is far too ship, and it's getting loaded at two different companies, port facilities in Albany Global and Buckeye. A little over a year ago, they applied to double their throughput of crude oil. Both of them did, and both of them were granted permission to double their throughput by DEC, having also said there will be no environmental impact, so we give it a negative declaration and we don't have to do an environmental impact statement. It's coming down by barges and vessels. And the vessel is one vessel, the Aphrodite, holds about 7 million gallons, and it fills in Albany and goes to the Gulf of Canada through New York City. Now you might ask yourself, why is it that there's oil coming from either Canada or North Dakota into the Port of Albany, down and then up to a refinery in Canada? And I think we are just beginning to understand that part of the reason that it's happening is it is a way to get around the current U.S. ban on exports of crude oil, which has been in existence since the 1970s when we had the gas shortage. By taking Canadian oil and putting it out in going to a Canadian refinery, it can then be sold to any country. And as we know, it is, even though there's this idea that we're going to ban exports of U.S. oil, the companies that are in the business of extracting and selling are multinational companies. They're not U.S. companies or Canadian companies. And so if they extract it from Canada and take it to a Canadian refinery, they can sell it to anybody they want it.
And Buckeye owns one of the world's biggest facilities in the hub. And so that's the other terminal in Albany. And they said that they want to get into tar sands crude. And it's at least Albany's going to be one key point in that process. We're focused on global right now because they've got the permits, but there's going to be more.
Yeah, there are two facilities. They're both Fortune 500 companies, and they have set themselves up. They bought these terminal facilities in 2007, both New Windsor and Albany. So they saw this coming, and they positioned themselves to be able to take advantage of what was going to happen.
Sorry to interrupt, but I just have a question. Aren't we exporting and sending it to Canada? How does that avoid, how did they...
If you remember the map,
yeah,
some of the Bakken crude is coming from Canada. You see the red line there?
Uh-huh.
This doesn't show that Alberta starts.
Right, okay. So the oil that comes from Canada
through the United States and goes back to Canada, that doesn't count.
That is not,
that's not an export of U.S.
Yes,
got it.
Okay. So, I may not have to spend too much time on what are the risks, but this slide is very telling. The first thing that I think is, if people are aware of it, we have had five or six huge rail spills that involve explosions and death in Quebec. It involves the destruction of a wetland area in Alabama. We saw the explosions in North Dakota that were spectacular, and they had to evacuate a five-mile area. So we have seen a lot of rail accidents involving Bakken crude and the results of that. We have also seen some fairly significant spills of heavy crude. Well, I should roll back. We have seen recently a spill of Bakken crude in a river, Mississippi River. 65 miles of the Mississippi River were shut down, and that was within the last month. And they're still working on trying to respond to that. Very similar to the kinds of conditions we would be facing in the Hudson. We have also seen a spill of heavy crude in Michigan, and yeah, in the Kalamazoo River 2 years ago, and they have spent millions of dollars, and they're still this is a billion now. So here's one of the things that we've learned recently, because a lot of people think, well, if we just have the response capabilities on land, on water, you know, in place, that's what we need to be focused on. In fact, that was what the governor's executive order was focused on. We need to study for 3 months what our response capabilities are. We need to make sure we have the assets in place that will allow us to respond, even if everything is perfect. There's a 15 to 20% recovery of oil of a Bakken crude spill. 15 to 20%. That means 80% of the oil remains in the environment. That's a successful spill response. And with tar sands, it's even worse. Perhaps 5%. So 95% of that crude is going to stay in the environment. And in the Hudson River, it's going to be on the bottom and in the waterfall. With a Bakken crude oil spill, it's going to be on the shoreline. And it's going to be on birds, everything that we've seen. So one of the things, the messages that we have been trying to carry to people is, this is not about getting ready, because even if we are ready, it's going to be a disaster. So
it's about preventing the disaster.
Yes, absolutely. So, yes.
The threat is far more graphic to imagine. The train derailment or an accident of some kind involving the train. How frequent is that is an accident that involves sparks?
Well, that is a good question. And we are looking into that question, but I mean the fact that we had a barge accident recently on the Mississippi, one of the things that the first vessel to carry crude oil down the Hudson River was loaded in December of 2012 and grounded 5 miles south of Albany. And it took the Coast Guard 4 hours to get a helicopter from Massachusetts to get to the site of the accident and determine that there was no spill of product. That's how few response assets we have on the Hudson right now. The reason why there wasn't a spill of product is because Exxon Valdez, which by the way, we're celebrating the 25th anniversary. I don't know if I'm celebrating the 25th anniversary of the spill, but one of the things that it did accomplish is it accomplished a requirement that all vessels carrying this kind of product be double-hulled. And so the vessel that grounded was a double-hulled boat, ripped the outer hull open, but it did not compromise the the inner hull, and so there was no product spill. However, why do we have a spill of Bakken crude in the Mississippi? Because it was not a grounding. It was a collision. Double hull toward the bottom. Collision in the side. And you can collide with another boat. You can both have collided with piers of bridges, et cetera, et cetera.
That bridge pier, in fact, just a couple months ago on the Mississippi.
Right. And so these accidents do happen, and the thing that really stands out is one of these train cars, 30,000 gallons, a vessel or a barge is carrying a significantly greater amount of product. And so the amount of product that you get released into the environment from a barge or a vessel capacity would be much more significant.
One of the things that the train companies, the industry moving the product by train has said is that our accident rate has not gone up. If they're moving so much more, those accidents have a much greater impact. And I think you can make the same analogy for a river traffic, too. There might be a small chance of an accident, but the more you're moving, the more chance of
the damage that's done damage.
Right. I mean, you are going to have a more confined area, potentially, that is impacted by a rail spill than by a spill in the Hudson River, although we are very concerned about the rail traffic over all the trestles across tributaries of the Hudson in Ulster County, for instance. And that would get carried out to the river fairly quickly. So this is a slightly different order of the
But anyway,
we're back to trains. And why we call them bomb trains. So it is the railroad industry, not the environmental groups, that call these trains bomb trains. And the reason is that 70% of the rolling stock carrying this crude oil are DOT 111s. They were designed to carry agricultural products. They are not adequately shielded. They don't have venting to protect against gas buildup. And they are very prone to puncture if there is a derailment. And if they're punctured, what makes Bakken crude light is that it has a lot more gaseous material in it that then off gases as it's rolling along in the tank car. And if the rail car derails and is punctured, all it takes is a spark and it will explode. So do we have none of those measures? Okay.
Who regulates these cars? Are there regulations in place to say what type of tanker they have to be in, or to what extent they have to have external shields or venting or anything?
So this is one of the challenging and frustrating aspects of this entire issue. There is no shortage of regulatory agencies that have some small piece of the responsibility to regulate. But nobody has all of it. And there's a lot of this going on. And basically, the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Pipeline of Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, which is a part of DOT, has some significant responsibility. And they, for 2 years, even the industry has said these cars are unsafe. But nobody has required the school regulatory rulemaking required them to be replaced. And everybody said, we should, we have to, we recommend that you do. It's a rulemaking, and the Pipeline and Hazardous Material Safety Administration has said, you know, we're working on it, and we think maybe by next year, we will have a rule in place that will require these cars to be replaced on some kind of timeline, which is not going to be immediately. because obviously there's a huge amount of expense that is going to be required to do this. The problem that we have is that these cranes are going to continue to carry this product for several years at least. And basically, our position is that they should not be allowed to carry heavy crude in New York. There's a difference. And we are calling on Governor Cuomo to take whatever action is necessary to place a moratorium on the use of these cars to transport this product in New York State. Because they are an accident waiting to happen. It's not a question of if it's going to happen, it's a question of when it's going to happen. And this, I don't know how many people were aware of it when it happened. It was in a very small town in Quebec. A train was sitting on a sloped area. The one person on the train, the engineer who was controlling the train, decided he needed some sleep, or set the brakes, went off to get some sleep, the brakes were set improperly. The train rolled down the hill and crashed and killed 47 people. And this that we have, which is the blast zone, put on, superimposed on an map of Houston, is in fact based on that accident. So the black radius is the red circle, and the evacuation zone is the yellow circle.
So if that derailment that happened here, that very minor derailment that we had, had in fact been the worst case, and we saw in the back, this red circles are buildings in the buildings, and the yellow would have been the evacuation zone.
But this was an incredible tragedy. There were six different companies involved, and this is also one of the very problematic issues around getting arms around this issue. So there is a railroad company that owns the tracks. There is a company that owns the cars. There is a company that owns the product inside the cars. There are at least two other companies that were involved. This is a short line railroad. All six companies have declared bankruptcy and walked away. And the cost of this, human cost, but also the cleanup cost, the compensation for claims that have arisen from this, are now all being borne by local and federal governments in Canada. And this is one of our biggest concerns about New York. We do not think that anybody is going to be adequately insured to be able to cover the cost of the disaster. Here we are dealing with Canadian Pacific and CSX. So, to my knowledge, short lines are not operating in the Mid-Hudson Valley. Now, whether short lines are operating coming out of Canada down Lake Champlain is another question, and I don't know the answer to that one. Aliceville, Alabama, you know, this happened in a not a very populated area, but this is months and months after the accident, and the oil is still there. This is really goes to the question of, even if you do respond, what are you really going to be able to do? This is Capitalton. This is the exploding car scenario for cars. And again, it was in a very underpopulated area, luckily, but they had to do a 5-mile evacuation because of the toxic character of the smoke and air that came out of these explosions. So this goes to part of your question, which is we have more information about spills from rail than we do spills from barge. But there has been a huge jump. So this is 1975 to 2012. There were 800,000 gallons spilled. In 2013 alone, there's there was a million 150,000.
And that's just in the U.S., so that doesn't even include Quebec disaster.
So, again, this is reflecting the increase in traffic and the fact that accidents will happen.
Also, the equipment is old. I mean, it's not...
The equipment is old and it was not designed to carry this kind of product. But one of the things that we might be on a later slide, but New York State has been trying to find actions that it can take, and one of the things that it did do was it did in conjunction with federal inspectors, they did an inspection of Port of Albany facilities, both rail car and rail bed, and they found dozens of problems, both with the rail bed and the rail cars, things out of line. I mean, the reality is that our rail system is not in great shape, and that there are accidents that happen over time. It's just that unless they're a commuter train, like that's reward, nobody really notices if a car goes off the track or a car carrying corn oil. But somehow we were supposed to be reassured by the fact that they did those inspections, but I was not at all, because those trains that they inspected then left and went down the track and went through Ulster County the next day. So these are some of the accidents that we were talking about that have happened very recently and locally. Basically, from December to February, there have been 4 significant derailments. In 2 cases, they were empty oil trains headed north to pick up product, and in 2 cases, they were full trains. So, no, go ahead. And by the way, please ask questions if you have questions. So Dan has been running around taking lots of local pictures so that we could feel...
Name
like this is our backyard, this is our neighborhood.
That's right.
So we have some key communities. This line is running through them, and these trains are running through them. Circling back to the river, there's been a lot of focus on the rail and the days of the rail, and much less focus on the river. But I think that, and many of us have worked for many years on the cleanup of the Hudson River, and invested a lot of time and energy. And the river has it's amazing. It's doing better than it ever has, and it's attracting all kinds of people to the river for recreation and tourism and everything else. And what we are putting at risk by running these barges down the river and just gambling is huge. And one of the things that we have been trying to focus on is the fact that there are a number of municipalities to get their drinking water from the Hudson.
There's close to 100,000 people overall, just from that,
And also the impact that it could have on, economic impact that it could have on many types of businesses that are river-based.
With that, it's been a state and international commerce.
There are all kinds of, we are going to get to the slides and say what can we do. There are all kinds of limitations potentially, and we've done a lot of talking to the Department of Environmental Conservation, because they're opening, how long has been our hands are tied, we don't have the authority to do blah, blah, blah. There is the ability for the state and for local governments to open a dialogue with the industry, to open a dialogue with federal regulators, to make partnerships. Instead of just saying,
we can't do it, they have to do it, which is basically what the governor's executive order does. There are other states that have reached out to CSX, for instance. Pennsylvania just negotiated an agreement with CSX, I believe. And EPA is at the table potentially as a regulator. They regulate all the facilities if they have the opportunity, if they have the potential of a spill of oil reaching a navigable water. And so both of the facilities in Albany and in the facilities in New Windsor are regulated by EPA. And so instead of saying, oh no, it's EPA, it's not us, how about we, you know, state government, local government, contact EPA, because can we do a joint inspection? Can we share information about what the facility response plans look like? So that's a long way of saying we have to get creative. But the last thing we want to do is say, not our job.
What about Army Corps?
Nah, they would get engaged if there was a proposal to dredge, which in fact, Meeting Global has a pending proposal to dredge to expand its dock facilities in Albany. I don't know whether in New Windsor or not.
And they increase the consistency. How could this?
We're going to get to that as well. So this is just some of the things that are at risk that we really care about, and there are many significant habitat areas in Ulster County, both in the estuaries and in the river itself. I hate seeing pictures of oil birds. But we have some very, very special species that live in and on the Hudson River that would be horribly impacted, and if it was a heavy crude spill, it would be those that live at the bottom of the ocean, of the river, and frequently, you know, besides the bottom feeders, the young of many of these species are growing up in bottom areas. And then if it's a bucket spill, which both, you know, it is the more typical, unfortunately, spill that we would see, that kind of oil and spoiling animals, etc.
I think about that first tanker that Kate mentioned that ran aground, it didn't spill, but if it had, it was right in all of the prime shad and herring habitat in the river. It was especially, you know, tried to bring back over the years all their spawning habits.
And you know, many people ask about, well, you know, how does it compare with trying to do a spill response or Deepwater Horizon, or Exxon Valdez? It's very different because this is a river, and it is a small area, and because it's not going to take long for spilled oil to get to shoreline or get to the bottom, there is much, much less time to respond. Of course, there is I think we could have. The one thing that I hope everybody saw the 50 Journal editorial, which was quite good. The little sign there is in fact an indicator of what's being carried in those cars. The first thing is that one of the federal agencies did a series of checks in North Dakota about whether or not what was being carried in the cars was being accurately represented outside of the cars, and I think like 8 out of 10 were inaccurate in terms of representing what was in the cars. All the things that we talked about in terms of cost. So what has the federal government done? Well, there's an emergency order saying you've got to test the crude, find out what's in it, before you load it. And then everything else has been pretty much, well, you know, lower speed in the big cities. Well, that's Buffalo and New York City. That doesn't do anybody in the Hudson Valley much good. Routing of trains that are carrying materials like this is secret. And it is kept secret by the industry pursuant to laws that were passed post 9/11.
it is, and we'll talk more about this, local communities, and particularly first responders, can demand the information, and they have to do it. But people haven't been doing that. The rest has been warning. In January, we got the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration issued a warning saying, warning, we just figured out that Bakken crude oil is much more flammable than we thought it was. So be careful. That was after, of course, all of the explosives that you just saw the pictures of. And then we also had the NTSB has been warning about the inadequacy of DOT-111 tank cars for some time. None of those have resulted in any regulatory action. I mentioned that Governor Cuomo's executive order. I don't know if people saw it or heard about it when it came out. He basically said, we don't have any authority. He put together a group of state agencies and asked them to write the federal government and asked the federal government to take action, and then he ordered a three-month state agency review of emergency preparedness. Again, our position is, that's very nice, but we don't have 3 months because, you know, black magenta, well, that could happen tomorrow. I mentioned the inspection list. 42 defects of just 6 miles of track. And then, the really funny, not funny, the unfortunate thing is that they did inspect all money in Buffalo. They did not inspect sulfur. And 3 days later, 5 days later, there was a derailment in sulfur, which is a no-go just outside the way. Here is something that we just found out about and I think is of significant interest to Ulster County, is the controller did an audit of railroad bridges in New York State and significant deficiencies in the bridge inspection program. It is, I think, it would be worth trying to find out what the controller found out about bridge inspection in Ulster County. Railroad bridge inspection. So one of the things that we have been paying very close attention to is what some local governments, county and city governments have been doing in terms of taking action, particularly because the state has basically taken a pass. I don't know how closely people are watching what's happening in Albany, but within the last week, the Albany County executive declared a moratorium, actually the Health Commissioner that declared a moratorium, on any kind of expansion of the global terminal pending a health department investigation. Global has hired a local law firm that sent a very nasty letter to the Albany County executive saying you don't have the authority to do that. But Fred LeBrun of the Albany Times Union wrote a really strong editorial that appears just online today, that appears in yesterday's paper, I believe, really calling out the Albany County executive for taking the step and protecting his citizens. And he was interviewed, the Albany County executive, and he said, I didn't have any choice because, you know, I saw what happened in Quebec. Am I just supposed to sit on my hands and wait for it to happen in Albany? I need to be able to find out what they're carrying. I need to be able to protect the citizens of Albany from a disaster. Rockland County, I sent you this one. I love this. So getting creative. The Rockland County Sheriff's Office got officers to go out with their state guns and check the speed of the oil train along the line. And one of the reasons why, by the way, we're having more accidents is because these trains are moving very fast. They've got all the products that they've got to get to the refinery. So these trains are going 50 miles an hour. And if there's a defect in a rail or a wheel, they're going to derail.
They have to brake. It could take a mile or a mile and a half to get the train that heavy. And I think even in the middle of the sun, kind of ulcer surrounding.
Yes, it was. And it was filled with, it was a full oil train. And it then took off a mile away from the derailed train. But it was still fairly close. And this is one of, I think, the more dramatic photos, which is of the derailment in Philadelphia. I can pass this around. On a railroad bridge that is over a water body and a major highway. And this is, it the other thing that I thought was very interesting was that the Rockland County Sheriff's Office did communicate with CSX. And this is open a dialogue with the industry. See, ask and see what they might be able to give you. And they were told by CSX two things. One is that CSX has an online computer system called Secure Now, which allows emergency responders to track train location and contact the train. It also has something that they call the density report. It provides information, more locally focused information about shipments. And again, this is something that could be requested by your, I don't know if you're the county emergency.
You can ask to request it. I'm not sure that how to grant the access to it. And the density report is just the number of trains. We reached out to CSX just on general planning stuff. We had to go so far to actually, DOT actually has an acoustic sensor. You actually had to put acoustic sensors out because they wouldn't be able to pull the train count from their own train movements through the county. So we actually had to count with acoustic sensors to the train movement count the speed.
So the only reason why CSX might become more cooperative is because more of a spotlight is being shown on their operations than it has been the case previously. And I wonder whether, if county sheriff's offices in multiple counties up and down the Nantucket line actually got together and started talking to CSX as a group, whether that would yield something more. The city of Albany is in a unique position to take an action because they actually have approval that Global needs from them, the site plan approval. And this is actually... No. Application? Yeah, we were thinking that it might be that.
It's just been a build within an existing building, not in front of anything. So it has a building sort of building permit.
Right, which is a non-discretionary action. They were threatening to do that. And there is no terminal in Ulster County, so this becomes a little less relevant. It might be relevant for Orange County because there are pending applications, which I believe...
I talked to Dave Church about
Orange County situation. Because the New Windsor Planning Board, I think, does have applications in front of it. So, and one of the things that I think we might have mentioned on the prior slide is that if indeed the New Windsor Terminal expansion and refitting is done so that it becomes another loading point on barges in the Mid-Hudson Valley, it could easily increase the amount of train traffic that is coming through Oakland County to go through the New Windsor property.
The estimate that we have is about 2 more trains per day.
Wow.
Between 1 and 2 more trains per day, the estimate.
Where did those come from?
It came from the industry source as well as from discussions with DEC.
So this is the vessel, the one vessel that is flying the Hudson that carries 7 million gallons, I believe, that goes through Canada. And it makes a round trip every 10 days. So you may have seen the Aphrodite. The rest of the transport of crude oil on the Hudson through barges and tugboats.
This is basically just saying all those actions we just looked at, it's basically for us at this point. Nothing apart from that.
And just to clarify, DEP, how did DEP arrive at a negative declaration for everything that Global is proposing to do? It is because Global asked for a modification of their air permit, and that's the only impact that they look at. They do not see their approving conceding of heavy crude so that it can be transferred from rail cars to boats and brought down the Hudson River. They don't see any of the impacts that might result from the flow on the Hudson as being in any way connected with the approval of the river. And that is what we are fighting. And in fact, we came very close to going to court this week to oppose the challenge to negative declaration. The only reason we're not going to court by the end of this week is because Global and DEC signed an agreement that allowed us to postpone going to court without sacrificing any of our rights. And it has to do with statutes of limitations and tolling agreements, and so I don't want to get into the specifics of that, but it just gives us a little more time to have a much more stronger case.
I think it's important to add that the risk to Ulster County, the Hudson River is not just from tankers. There is a significant portion of the railroad in Ulster County, London.
And in some cases, it's very...
Oh, yeah, it's literally on. It's literally on. Okay.
Right.
It would begin the river.
No, the river faces a triple threat of a rail spill, a vessel spill, or a barge spill. They're all significant. This is, I'm not sure why we picked this slide, but it actually reminds me of something about response, which is, again, you know, setting aside that even under the best conditions, you're going to have very little oil that can be recovered. You cannot do so much in the literally. You cannot get boats there, you can't put on booms, you can't put out skimmers. And so one of the positions that River Cooper is taking at this point is that there is no safe way, there is no way to transport crude oil on the Hudson River that would not, where it would not lead to a Hudson disaster. And so we think there should be a payout of transport of crude oil on the Hudson River. The rail is, there are a lot of conditions that would have to be met. The first one being the complete elimination of the DOT 111, the upgrade of the rail infrastructure, and the ability to respond, and to be able to clean up more than 20%. And a moratorium should be in place until all of those things are accomplished. I don't know that we picked a number, but we think that there are huge hurdles that need to be, things that need to be accomplished before we should even consider allowing it by rail. And by the way, by rail, not just in the Hudson Valley. This is coming the entire length of the New York State through lots of small communities. Riverkeeper focus is regional, and so we are talking about this regionally, but I don't want people to think that a spill in Lake Champlain would be a disaster.
Can you talk a little bit about Pennsylvania's ability to negotiate the CSX law more information?
You have the information on that. I know that...
Just the basics that you mentioned, really, the secure now system and incident.
No, that was Rockwell County. Yeah, no, this was about Pennsylvania's recent, and it was in the press, and I have the press report someplace, but I'm not sure that I know exactly what it is. But that is information that I can get you. Because they worked out what they termed was a memorandum of agreement with CSX, where CSX said, we're willing to provide you more information pursuant to this memorandum of agreement.
That was for the state.
I think we also have some leverage in the state of New York, and the state does have some leverage. Federal funds do pass through NYSDA for safety that goes to new railroad safety improvements. We actually, this transportation downside has transferred several millions of dollars in programming several dollars that double tracks the CSX track. The tracking report is also, I think, important because in addition to oil, there's a lot of other hazards that are exposed by rail, and the Emergency Management Council has identified that its number one risk is hazardous rail shipments from the city of Princeton.
Really?
So I think that goes back almost 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, prior to all the things. So this highlights that in the need for some of the tracking.
Right, and DOT, New York State DOT, does coordinate with U.S. DOT in terms of railroad ride inspection to some extent. But here again, this is, you could say, oh, New York State DOT doesn't have any authority because this is all preempted by U.S. DOT. But the reality is that U.S. DOT may be perfectly happy to delegate some of this regulatory responsibility to New York State and enter into some kind of collaborative agreement in order to do that. So again, you know, we are urging people to think creatively, to reach out to the CSX, which obviously you are, and I will make sure that I hunt down that information about Pennsylvania. So, we did try to put three slides together about sort of brainstorming we had thought of, and some of this, it sounds like Dennis has already thought of. A couple of things that I wanted to highlight. One of the things that we commented on is in the governor's executive order is they're only doing a review of state agency preparedness with state agencies sitting at the table. And we said there should be county and local governments sitting at the table now for this 3-month study. They should be sitting there. They're the ones that are going to have to respond in the first instance to an accident like this. They should be sitting at the table now. Well, it did not make a dent, you know, our saying it didn't make a dent, but I really think that it's an act that should be repeated. The other is county-owned property. Is there rail that goes under county-owned property? Dennis, I didn't know the answer to that.
I don't know the answer. There's certainly rail very close to county-owned property. Mm-hmm. One is critical infrastructure, which is the information services, and the one which is communication to the railroad.
So, I mean, being a property owner gives you a special kind of status in terms of saying, well, listen, are you guys, do you have adequate commercial insurance to cover a damage you went through to our property?
Right.
And then what you were talking about in terms of local waterfront revitalization plans, do you have? So there is, I've done some looking at this with respect to the city of Albany. If you are an LWRP community, you have some authority to engage with DEC and Department of State. Now, unfortunately, Ulster County doesn't have any pending applications in front of DEC, but it would be the case for Orange County and for New Windsor specifically, although I don't know if it's an LWRP community. But you have a special standing in terms of being able to raise issues about inconsistency with the proposed activity with your local waterfront revitalization plan.
So, what can the Elk County Legislature ask New York State to do? We would urge you to consider submitting formal comments to the DEC, both with respect to the terminal and with respect to the new terminal. But particularly Albany, because...
The deadline is April
2nd. Yeah. April 2nd is the comment deadline. And the what is being proposed is boilers that will allow global to keep heavy crude, you know, that stuff that was being held in somebody's hands, so that it can be loaded on barges so that it can come by Ulster County. So I think that there is every reason for Ulster County to be concerned and want to submit comments, whether it be from the legislature or from the executive.
Is there any chance that that comment period can be extended? That's a really short deadline.
It has been extended several times. They originally were going to close the comment period. They issued a draft comment in December.
Not commenting on the impact statement, you're commenting on a draft permit, as I understand.
Yes, you're commenting on the draft permit. They issued that in December, and they were going to close the comment period in the second week of January, and we pushed several times. A number of different people pushed, and we got it extended to April 2nd. I would urge you to consider doing that, and to, in those comments, to request that the negative deck be rescinded, and that a full environmental impact statement be conducted that will look at the potential impacts to downriver communities in Ulster County, among others.
And we have a draft letter on our website.
An inspection list on Ulster County rail lines. And as I said, a written request to the governor to include local and county emergency responders in the state review of local preparedness that's ongoing right now. And I believe the report is due in the end of April, so 3 months report. So it's in process. Yeah, after the comment period. This is the beginning of community education reach out.
We have the deadline to finish the presentation, and now we can take it under.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Tracy, because it is because of you that we have something, and we are happy to bring it to others. I have to say that Big Church has. I'll just keep meeting on that floor. In any way, Orange County has right now because of the immigrant facility. But if you want to partner with us in some sort of other communities within Ulster County,
Preventers Association, yeah. It really should.
For Ulster
County, it should be your next
town. Yeah, certainly Ulster, Stockton, East, Associates, Marlborough.
We have a lot of familiar towns,
but,
you know, people from the county would be interested.
Is Connie be able to convene that kind of group and work out the organization? We're really lacking in the logistical, the tons of both things.
But they already need some of cross treatment.
Yeah.
And we could also do an informational meeting and possibly write just a very basic letter. Maybe the executive side can write something more. But I think it is. On this short timeline, you know, just something
very simple. Rescinding the name Dex seems like an obvious.
Because they did not consider any family river impact whatsoever, whether it's from rail or...
Well, they considered
drinking water.
How can they possibly not have a more holistic... They are the Department of Environmental Conservation Law.
Well, and they are, in fact, responsible for designating a lot of these critical habitat areas in the river. And so you would think, and the Hudson River Estuary Program, spends a tremendous amount of time and money preserving the estuary.
I'm sorry, it's kind of funny from a historical perspective. It's very interesting that J.P. Rockefeller's family, his first lifetime, had to get his kerosene shipments away from the railroads and came in and started building his own pipelines, and that's why we have the pipeline system today. Here we are back, putting the oil back on railroads. I mean, this is an argument for pipelines. They're a lot more safe.
In many ways, that's a false choice. Because there is no regulatory agency that has the authority to say, no, you can't do it this way, you have to do it by pipeline. And there is so much...
It's a choice, but it's an education, but it's not a safety thing.
There is so much oil that people who have the oil and want to get it from the refinery are going to get it there any way they can. And so they will do pipeline. They will do rail. They will do vessel. And it's not an either-or.
There's some indication that pipelines wouldn't take it.
In fact, there is a pipeline company that will not take it, Enbridge, because it not only is it resolvable, but it's too corrosive.
Okay. Yeah.
So they're not even willing to risk their pipe infrastructure to allow it to be transported through their pipeline.
Mm.
But the companies that are extracting it don't want to use pipelines either, because they are moving their drill rigs all over the place, and they don't want to have to go through the process of having to build pipeline access to a drill site that may change a couple of years from now to another drill site, and another drill site, and another drill site. It's plain, much more convenient way for them to get into market. Do we have another... So one of the things that we did want to suggest, because we have seen our federal representatives starting to step up, and including Senator Gillibrand and Senator Schumer, and I think that continuing to collaborate with them and communicate with them and through them is a very, very useful thing to do, to continue to send a message that this is a critical issue. We want them to step up on it. I also think congressional representatives, particularly congressional representatives that are on key committees in both the Senate and the House of Representatives, and we should be moving more work on figuring out who those representatives are. But certainly, if they hear from elected officials within their
quite as urgent as that April 2nd deadline, though. I mean, that we can do over time.
I think we could take on a lot of your suggestions over time, and I think we could hold a forum. I think that April 2nd is a tight turn for our meeting schedule, so I think the best we could do is draft, and we could talk about this in a minute, but we could draft a letter and circulate it if the committee consents, and circulate it, and it could be sent from the committee. It wouldn't be from the legislature, but on behalf of the committee, we would send the letter for the April 2nd deadline. But I think that we should continue discussion about hosting a forum, getting the word out to a broader audience, and also the committee. We could talk about taking on some of these requests, including reaching out to our own sheriff's department and asking about those kinds of getting speed monitor on the swim trains, and a lot of these other suggestions I think we could take up. And of course, coordinating with the executive's office too, I think, so we're not duplicating in the executive room.
Are there any other communication channels that you use to communicate widely among elected officials that you could get a message out before April 2nd?
We can certainly get it directly to the Supervisors Association. We could get, once we had a draft letter, we could share it with the supervisors and all our individual supervisors, which would get it to. I would also reach out to, you tend to be listed in here. I think it affects countywide. I don't live in one of those communities that you've listed, but I would especially reach out to all those communities that you've listed, including the ones who are affected by either drinking water or by the girls going directly to their communities. And we could reach out to all the legislators from those individual communities to draft their own letter or to use my letter to send as a legislator or as a community leader as well.
Most of the policy committee consists of the Urbana area supervisors and representatives of the council. We can reach them as a correspondent to the council from the state to be aware of it and continue to present them as such.
So you're asking us to?
The correspondent through you, transportation council, to be aware of it.
So it's that
language
is replaced. Mm-hmm. So did we? Yes, it certainly is replaceable. So the Transportation Council is an arm of the
We serve as host agency. Actually, no, it's a creation of the federal government. You know?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
We serve as the Land Department serves as host agency.
Can you email me?
Yes, I will.
In house? Can you take that? Okay, that would be great. I did want to mention, the only thing about this slide that I did want to mention is beyond commenting on the environmental review process focused on the global facilities of Albany, we are asking people to support the concept of a moratorium. We know that we're pretty much the strongest voice on that, but it was taken up by several editorials recently, and I think, the question that sometimes people ask is, well, who has the authority to enact a moratorium? I think that we have to make the call, and the more people and governments and elected officials that are making the call, the more pressure there is on our state government and our federal agencies to answer it out. Yeah.
I had one question. When you talked about what Riverkeeper's role, you talked about the spill response plan. Okay, spill response plan for the Hudson River, based on the news. Is there a spill response plan?
There is it's called an area contingency plan, and it's put together by the Coast Guard with input from an area committee. And Riverkeeper's boat captain, among many others, a number of others, listed is on the area committee. The spill response plan is a plan that describes how you would respond to a worst-case scenario spill, and the worst-case scenario spill in the current spill response plan is a spill of refined heating oil by the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. And we said, part of the problem with an upper river response is there are no response assets up here if there's a spill up here. So they are in the process of revising the spill response plan this year, which is really good. And I think that it's going to be very valuable to get upper river input on it. We have a focus on the needs of the upper river communities and the spill response assets that need to be up here and the focus that needs to be up here. By the way, this is our hashtag.
Right. So all of you.
Not on my watch. So a little rough. We're still, you know.
Oh, thank you.
And any comments, questions, suggestions?
I just wanted to offer, if you're sending Dennis the PowerPoint, I would be glad to forward it to Carl Shipman for the Supervisors Association. If you would CC me, and then you'll be able to follow up as needed. Really great, great work. I want to thank you. I want to just mention one other thing, and that is, you know, for years we've been talking about transitioning to a green energy economy. And it always moved down the road. And we talked about peak oil, and peak oil theoretically was in 2008. But then we found with fracking that we could get a whole lot more oil. Basically what's happened is we used up all the low-hanging fruit in terms of fossil fuels. So even if we didn't have a climate crisis, it's no longer easy or sort of, even possible to be really safe anymore. You could easily get to a big pocket of natural gas, or, you know, go down a few hundred feet to get oil out of the ground, or, you know, but now it's, you know, 1,000 feet, and we have the BP oil still, and I think the most stunning thing is to see how quickly the increased traffic has occurred, and why it's not just, oh, we've always sailed oil up, you know, sent oil. The rivers are nice, inexpensive, environmentally friendly mode of transportation. And, you know, those are some of the things that I hear when I raise this. But we have, because we are past the peak of oil, we are past the peak of how it was safe to get fossil fuel. And now we're at the point where we are digging deeper, drilling deeper, and doing much more invasive things. And just cannot create that level of safety, because we haven't invested in the infrastructure to transition to the very truly safe technology. Wind, water, and the sun, and maybe a little tidal sun. If I can get that past River Key. No, I think that extreme energy extraction, which is what we're looking at, I mean, the fun fact that it burns as much energy as it gets. The interesting thing about this is a whole new look for this country at what was going on in other countries. For us to be able to get the fuel to run our country, this is what was happening. This is what these companies were doing in countries in South America and Africa. And now we are becoming that third world country that all the damage associated with fossil fuel extraction causes, and much of this oil is not going to stay in this country. It is going someplace else. And so the whole energy independence, it's just another trillion. We will see very soon LNG export terminals, and Congress is fighting to get the ban on export of crude oil from the 70s to be reversed. And
what's going to the refinery is on the coast, but it's not going overseas, or it is going overseas. Or is it being replaced? Well, it's a comparable overseas, and the refinery is refining oil from the U.S. that is slated for the market.
there is, well, first of all, crude oil that is being taken out of the ground in North Dakota has to stay here until it's refined. I don't know whether refined oil is being exported. I don't know the answer to that. I know crude oil from the United States is not being exported. The crude oil that's coming from Canada, somehow that is, yeah, is likely being exported.
Anyway, we're just changing the shipping pattern of it from across the U.S. to across the country.
Are there any other questions?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Can you also send me a digital copy of the PowerPoint both so I can give it to Chris and then I think we can forward it to all of the legislators? I mean, we can give some hard copies, but I think it'd be helpful.
No, that would be great.
And then Kate, I'll coordinate with you about the potential of setting up a public forum here in Chambers sometime in the
near future.
That would be possible. And that was to reach out to the community. We had some concerns. We were at the last one we did, so lifetime gathering comments for the water leak.
Right, so
lower something.
That would be great. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I will see you on Friday.
Yes.
And then I think that we can maybe next month. Well, we're not finished yet. We do have a resolution, but on this topic, maybe next month I'll try to something together, we could talk about how to proceed and what to ask for from the legislature, maybe we can meet with the executive office.
We really appreciate the time.
Thank you very much for taking your time. We really appreciate it too.
Does anybody want to listen to something?
And maybe one for Christmas for the record, that'd be great.
For videotaping it, I'm really going to put it up.
I'll see how it makes the price, and we're going to use it in our group to influence people and maybe get it on public access to you.
I was going to say,
Okay.
Remember you had asked about that.
And this is coming up. It's going to be here in the legislature.
Yeah, this is a power grid issue as opposed to the zone issue?
No, it's both.
Oh, it's both? So I did find out that the FERC has denied the phasing in.
FERC has denied it.
There was a request by LIPA and PSC to allow a phase-in of the increase in price, and FERC denied that in January, and so we are going to see the full 10% May 1.
Well, we haven't given up on that yet.
So what I was told is that I don't know about whether or not other than going to court, I was told that there really isn't an appeal, but that what we should be doing, actually, is pushing hard on the PSC, maybe with the help of the second floor in Albany, the executive, to get the hurdles out of the way of distributed generators that are currently, making it very difficult to move in that direction. And distributed generation, more localized power generation. And that the market will, in theory, wants to drive things in that direction, but there are all these, hurdles and blockades, and it is those that need to be cleared out of the way. And in an ideal world, they would have been cleared out of the way before they took this action, instead of putting us in the middle of, this battle. But
anyway, I was told that there seemed to be, because NYPA and PSC kind of went to bat with work for us, there seems to be some desire at the Albany level to do something, and so a good ask, I think, would be to, you know, get the hurdles, the things that are keeping us from moving towards the generation out of the way.
That won't stop the increase in May, and we have not given up on that. It has never happened before, but there is such widespread opposition. You know, this is across the board at every level except the governor, and I haven't given up on that yet either. But I mean, the thing that disturbs me is this was initiated by PISO, which is this opaque, you know, who are they and who gives them the right to do this. And then it was approved by FERC. And I kept saying, where's the public process? Where was the opportunity for public comment? It didn't exist. But I actually thought it was a transparent, but, you know, we're all busy, and nobody had their finger on that pulse until it was almost too late, but I don't believe it's too late yet.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I was told that if somebody wanted to go to court, that was probably the next thing that it would have to happen.
Yeah.
So I don't know if anybody's prepared to vote.
Thank you again.
Okay,
we're going to move on to the resolution.
Where are we?
The resolution is on the second to last page. I did get a call from Legislator Lauren. I don't know, I guess in caucus he also raised concerns about this resolution. Were either of you in caucus?
Yeah. He made it up. He made something, but then everybody kind of answered it. It was about the trout. When he answered about the trout, everybody was like, that's just this tiny little piece of the puzzle, the main thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think you spoke on it, right?
Yeah. He basically said to me that you didn't understand, I'm paraphrasing, a $10,000 stocking for fish for a $290,000 program. He understood that the money was coming from other sources, but I understand this just in general, that it comes out of our pockets one way or another. He was under the impression that the stream management plan had already been done, which was not my impression. I thought that this was a new...
Did somebody tell him it wasn't new? No.
He just seemed to recall that. I don't know. I wonder if Dennis is still here. Dennis might know. Is Dennis still out there?
No. So is Dennis still out there from UC? Thank you.
I didn't hear of any other concerns. I mean, when I spoke to Vicki today, she said Pete was the only concern that she heard. So I don't know if anyone has any other information to shed. There's no reason to believe it's not. I mean, they talk about it in a future tense. To develop lower
scope. There have been, for example, there's lower scope is River Watch or Stream Watch, and they did a plan. And those
were the resources to do it. So don't they get grants and they hire people, basically, whether it's different organizations, they're gonna.
Yeah.
I thought somebody said the engineers were already picked.
I don't know about that, because I had some people, I was talking, my concern was that they get really good people, and I said, how do they decide who is going to, this is a lot of money to develop a plan, it better be a good plan, and there are very good people in the field, and then,
you know, not such good people in the field, and I'd like to know that the money's being well spent. I didn't get that answer yet, but...
It's a really good question that you're asking. I think the issue is once we, if assuming we approve this, then it allows them to do an RFP, then we will approve it when we get those contracts over $50,000.
Okay.
That's the frustrating part, though. We have no idea who, six people bid. They could pick the most expensive and the fifth most qualified, and we don't know it. We just get the, you know what I mean?
I mean, this says that we're going to be in a cooperative agreement with New York State DEC, and that we'll be the fiscal agent on the project. It's, I mean, the money's flowing through us.
Who's picking them? The agent.
I would assume that it would be DEC.
Okay.
If it's a DEC project, I would assume. But I mean, no one.
Well, if you want to move it out of committee tonight, I'll vote for it. But I would like to get that question answered. How is the technical consultant selected, and who is going to develop the stream management plan? Because I do think, in partnership with DEC, is that the same DEC who just neg decked? Sometimes they do really great work, and so any oversight that we can
have. Krista might have some information.
The Lower Osophis Watershed Partnership has a technical committee, subcommittee, that has been formed,
yes.
That is specifically putting together the plan. They are the ones who will be picking the,
okay.
your consultants, they'll be the ones putting together the plan, and then working in consultation with our planning department on making this happen, not DEC. I believe DEC is a part of the partnership.
They're not making the choice correctly.
Because it doesn't... It mentions the Lower Osophis, but it doesn't mention that local organization, which knows as much about the Lower Osophis as anyone.
Yeah.
I
believe that's in the backup in regard, and I did not copy the backup. I'm sorry, I think it's 75 pages. Yeah, the backup to the resolution, it was large. But I believe
with
that
in
there.
Packet for coffee.
That was 100.
Okay. I'll look at it tonight.
Yeah,
then.
I'll make sure you have backup on that.
Yeah. So what's the committee's pleasure? Do you want to move it out of committee, and if we have a concern tomorrow?
I think we have some safety checks. We have the actual contract and backup information. So.
And I'll make the calls in the morning too, just to confirm all of that.
Okay.
To give everyone a level of comfort.
Caucus, just like that last one with the seal, nobody asked any questions, so it's
Yeah.
And I should have come in because everybody told me that they were fine with it.
That's, I know, and that's what
I was totally shocked when I ran into Dave Donaldson, and he just told me that they were putting it off.
And our committee right now is meeting a week late, so we're running behind in terms of tomorrow. I think I'm comfortable passing it, and I also want to say if we find something that's problematic by tomorrow, I think the word of the committee, the four of us saying we passed it with the confidence of getting these questions answered, but in that interim we found a problem, I believe our colleagues would back us.
I think that's
fine. All in favor? Well, do we need to make a motion?
No, we didn't.
No. No motion to put it on the table. Second? Okay. And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So, couple other updates. I think I brought you up to date. I mentioned that I spoke to Leon Smith.
Before
you were here.
No, I know that.
Okay, so hopefully this week or next week I'll talk to him did say that the board was had some questions about the bonding, but as they had time to think about more, so you know, go and talk about that further. The Climate Smart Committee, which Mary will remember, we discussed for 2 years straight. I met with the chairman of the legislature and told him the names that we were considering, just to keep him ahead of the curve, because it actually is a chairman's appointment that then is confirmed by the legislature. He was comfortable with all the names I brought forward to him. What I'd like to do tonight, if we can, is move forward a recommendation. There's five plus. One from this committee, I'd like to move forward Manna's name. One from Public Works, move forward Peter Warren's name. One person from community, town government, move forward Laura Petit's name. Laura was actually the original, I wasn't here, but the original sponsor of the resolution. From the environmental community, Ron Leonard from Travel Unlimited. And then hold the business community appointment. We are talking with someone, but she just needs to confirm with the organization she's with that it's okay with the organization. Now, so from a procedural sense, I'd like to have a motion from the committee to move forward those names to the chairman, and then the chairman will formally move them back to us in the form of a resolution, and it'll come to resolution.
Will this person be set next month?
Yes, I believe so. I believe we have a really good chance. So, and
worth waiting for.
Yeah, absolutely worth waiting for. And as I said, all five names I've spoken to the chairman about, and he's okay with. And I'm just happy that we're finally getting close to actually convening one of these. So, I entertain a motion to move forward those four names, Nana Jo Green, Peter Lauren, Ron Leonard, and Laura Petit, to the chairman.
We're not going to be able to vote, so do we have
it?
You can vote.
Our rules are, the only time you really can vote is if you have a financial interest in the outcome.
Okay, you can do that.
People have begged it and gotten a tough vote. But
okay.
So, yeah, you have no financial interest in this, so you can...
No, and again, it's just a recommendation, so I think the vote will have more weight with your confidence of your own. And all in favor?
Aye.
Great, that makes me very happy. And one more update. The EIC, the last meeting, we had a presentation on the EIC. So I also spoke to the chairman about that, and he was very interested and excited. So what I believe the next step is, and what I just want to let the committee know that I'm going to do, is I'm going to work to get together stakeholders meetings. And what that means is representatives from the executive's office, the chairman, majority, and minority leadership, as well as myself. We'll have to be careful. No one else from this committee obviously would be able to attend, because if with legislator Ron and myself, we would more than normally make a quorum. After a working, I'm just calling a stakeholders meeting, then we will have a presentation, assuming everything, questions get answered in that meeting. We'll have a presentation for the full legislature, ideally to bring it forward in fairly short order. I mean, it's going to take, these things take some time, but I'm very excited about it.
They gave presentations. We have attorneys and folks that can, you know,
absolutely,
and work, you know, we don't have to do.
And I think also, I'll keep obviously the committee abreast, and if in the interim, as you're looking through the documents prior to the, if in the interim prior to the legislative meeting, if anyone has any questions that they want me to ask at that stakeholders meeting, just let me know, and I'll be happy to forward your questions and get answers prior to the meeting of the full body. I think it's going to require that we have a special, like when we have one of those informational meetings, a special meeting for the full body prior to a vote, just because it is a little more complex. And it is, I think it's I'm very, very excited about it and very grateful to Nana for bringing it forward because it's really great. Yeah, the idea that the legislature is actually going to be bringing forward a policy is pretty exciting. So.
Well, you know, that's the thing. At one extreme, we're talking about, you know, that whole PowerPoint we just saw and the risk. So we've got to be really proactive about the alternative. And I passed this around, but I just want to be sure everybody knows. There's a slight change in the agenda. We've added, actually, Ron Leonard, who you just mentioned, is going to do kind of a quick overview of the energy situation right after Jen Metzger. And then, you know, this is really going to the source. Tom Rumsey is going to be there, and it was the New York ISO that proposed the new capacity zone. So, you know, we'll get to hear their thinking, and then we'll get to hear the Public Service Commission, who strongly oppose its implementation and agree with focusing on transmission first.
Are you going to circulate this to all the...
Yeah,
I think we really should urge everyone to attend. It really, I mean, it is critical.
Krista, I'll forward that to you to send to everyone. I was waiting for just that one revision, and that just happened over the weekend.
Perfect. It's amazing. I don't know if anyone's gotten their power bills lately, but just the increase in...
Mine wasn't bad. I was bracing myself, and mine was almost the same.
Yeah, mine was a little higher. Not as much as other people, but it was higher.
It's pretty crazy, and I've been hearing about it from a lot of constituents. And that's prior to what Kate was just talking about, the necessity to zone within in May. Prior to that, which I don't know that we'll... May, this May, we'll see, you won't feel it as much as in the summer.
I don't know if it's different because I'm on the Green County line.
In Ulster County, but
no, I don't think so.
Oh, do you have...
Do you have
a... Well, it's just not... It's not the delivery. They're all buying the power for the same people.
It's too many
stuff off, yeah.
Maybe you're... You live in your
county? Maybe I'll get down there. Do you live in Green County? You live in Green County?
Yeah.
I don't
know. If anyone has, before the next meeting, if anyone has any agenda items they want to put on, well, let me know our next meeting.
There's a lot going to have.
There's a lot to think about and a lot to discuss. And I will try to get something in writing prior to circulate regarding the presentation tonight for the next meeting. But in advance, I will circulate. I will circulate a draft letter just for the committee to sign on.
Okay.
And we don't need to have a motion, just any member of the committee that wants to sign on will sign on to the letter and we'll send it from...
Do we have a sense? I mean, I think the thing that was most outstanding is the issue of that DEC issued a negative declaration without looking past air. I think that and just the whole safety issue, if you can just stress those. I think more than that is kind of hard to do on short notice.
Yeah. And I think also it really is hit home, as Kate mentioned, you know, she lives in Garner, she's in my community, and I've been talking to her about this for several months, but just the fact that within a month we had a derailment in our county that could easily have been a disaster. Just lucky that you look at those pictures, 47 people dead in a small community. And I don't know if you've been, I've been near the trains on, I guess it's Marlboro, kind of down right by the river, the trains run. And I was down there when the train screaming past, you know, like I said, 75 cars at no slow clip. I mean, really moving. So it is. It's scary, and it's scary to me to hear that when Kate described it as people pointing fingers. Just that when you ask who is in control of this, who's regulating it, and the answer is effectively no one. That's a real
and also the distance that is coming. I mean, that is so much open to things happening.
Absolutely.
You know, that's far.
It is. Thank you all for participating. And hey, is there anything else that you want to discuss tonight? Okay. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.